You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster.
You know, when we play big music, that means there's a big-time guest coming on. And no, it's not Musselman, okay? Yeah, that's big-time Marine Corps parade music. So I'll let Mike do the...
Hit the switch.
I'll let Mike do the introduction, but Mike, introduce our special guest for the day.
Hey, are we on?
Yeah, we're on.
Okay, it sounds a little weird. Chris, so Mac has been prepping this for the last few months, playing the Gunner Chris Wade videos. Gunner Chris Wade is currently serving on active duty in the United States Marine Corps and currently serving as the 2nd Marine Division Gunner. And so, before anything else, so Chris has been a gunner for, how long have you been a gunner, Chris?
About 11 years.
Yeah. And so, Chris, go ahead and just explain a little bit about yourself.
Well, hold on. Hey, Chris, can you hear okay?
Oh, yeah, I can hear very well.
Okay, Mike, can you hear okay?
Yeah. Yeah, I can hear okay.
Okay, all right, because I could call one of you on a separate line, and that if that's easier. But okay, all right, Chris. So tell everybody. First of all, first things first. How did you meet Mike? And because Mike's somewhat of a charismatic figure, yes.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
How did you meet? What is your first encounter with Mike Musselman, and what did you think?
I would say my first solid interaction with Mike was when I was stationed at 29 Palms, and I was the 3rd LAR gunner. And Mike called me up because he was out there conducting some tests, and he said, hey, come with me. And I jumped in the vehicle, and we went out to a range, and I got to witness some of the testing of the M249 light machine gun relative to the M27 infantry automatic rifle. Because I was a skeptic. In fact, I was a total skeptic, and vocally so. Mike didn't even say anything. He just put me out on the range and let me watch the M27 absolutely eat the saw's lunch in terms of effectiveness. And that was a game changer for me. So that was my first interaction with Mike.
Okay. But so he didn't really speak to you. He just said, come with me.
No, we talked on the way out to the range.
I didn't want to influence his position.
Okay, so Mike, give us the background.
I wanted him to see it.
Give us the background, Mike. So the division is doing evaluations of the M27 and the M249?
Oh, I wasn't at the division. The M27 is because 27 was the test guy.
Ah.
So 2nd Battalion, 7th Marine, thus the name M27, were the test subjects. So the test had been written up. I was in Quantico. I came out for the test and to monitor it, make sure that no goofy shit was going on.
Okay.
And so I had the opportunity to link up Chris because Chris had been, you know, kind of not believing what had been said so far. You know, he was one of the guys that kind of belt fed machine gun was better, and you know, the saw is. You know, Mac, I mean, we came in the Marine Corps and saw it was making its debut. It was, you know, night and day better than anything we've ever seen. It was amazing.
Right, absolutely.
But then as we've seen through our time and realized that, you know, accuracy also counts. And, you know, you can have a beaten zone the size of a football stadium. It doesn't mean anything.
Right. And so Chris became a convert that day. And so that was your first encounter with Musselman. Were you immediately
yeah.
drawn to his charisma and his warmth as a human being?
I didn't have charisma.
Shut up. Shut up, Mike. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I would have to honestly say that, he articulated once I was processing what I had seen.
Right.
Which was a pretty big deal for me.
Right.
I found that he was able to sit down with me and articulate very effectively and quickly what I had seen and put it all into context. And yes, I did become a convert, a very staunch convert, in fact, and I still am.
So, Mac, it was Jeff Eby and I, we had a talk that Chris Wade was going to be. We wanted Chris to come out and replace me when I left, went back to First Marine Regiment. Because if you've never met, so there's gunners out there. They're great gunners. Believe me, there's some great gunners that I've served with and fantastic gunners. But there's very few gunners that have that internal drive that you don't have to brief them up on it or get them spun up on it. They feed themselves, they focus with laser accuracy, and they attack it. And so Chris was that guy that we needed, you know, and, you know, I think a conversation that we had, Chris, where you were kind of like, nah, bullshit, I'm not the guy. And, you know, or I'm not the guy that's going to be smart enough to be up there talking about weapons and da 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 da. And we were wrong, because, like I said the other day, Mike, Jeff and I probably got the ball to our own 25-yard line, and then Chris got it to the opposing team's 20-yard line. So
he did say that, Chris. And he also said that your middle name is Percival. Is that true?
No. No, it's a good Irish Patrick.
Ah, that's good. That's my son's name. I like that. I like
Percival
that.
Percival is so much funny story, though.
It is. It would have been a bit.
I told a lot of people that your middle name is Percival, and they're like, shit, I never knew that. I said, yeah, I'm talking about it.
That's funny.
It doesn't have to be true. So, first of all, Chris, let's talk about you for a second. Born and raised where?
All over the United States, you know, principally like Wisconsin, Michigan, you know, northern states. My home is Montana, Bozeman, Montana.
You're a Montana guy. That's awesome, man. One of the prettiest states in the country.
And cold.
Yeah, right now it's cold. It was raining in 46 there this morning, just so you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Dreadful.
Yeah, but it's all right because it was snowing in the teens a few days before. How does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
That's a good one. I know, just coming from a family that had, you know, World War II and lots of people in the service, there were no Marines, and I knew I wanted to join the service with my grandfather and so on, much like a lot of other people.
Right.
But I just decided to pick the one that at the time seemed to offer the greatest challenge and, admittedly, the greatest chance of going to combat, direct combat.
And what year did you join the Marine Corps?
I joined the Marine Corps in the summer of 1987, and then I graduated high school early. I had to get out of there. My parents signed me off, and I was able to go into recruit training in February of 88.
Okay, and from the get-go, you want to be a grunt?
Yes. In fact, thankfully, you get to sign up for that. So, you know, you get to sign up to be a I think it's called Uniform Hotel. I signed up at Uniform Hotel and went 03, and they, you know, when I got to the infantry training school, they're like, oh, you have a driver's license, you're not a moron, and you're a tow gunner. So they made me a tow gunner.
Yeah, they were the smart guys. Mike would tell you the mortarmen are, but tow gunners, demolition guys.
Well, they're probably right behind
mortarmen. I tell you what, the mortar is much more complex than the tow, I can tell you that.
Oh, I could, yeah, all you have to do is ask Mike, he'll tell you. So give us some idea. Let's talk combat deployments, Chris. Tell us where you've been relative to Iraq, Afghanistan, and other places.
So I started out as I was in Task Force Ripper 1-7. I was an attachment to 1-7, Lieutenant Colonel James Mattis, commanding 1-7 in the Gulf War, where I was a tow gunner. And then I got an opportunity to go to the very end of the United Nations withdrawal of Somalia there in Mogadishu for a very short period of time as a scout sniper team leader, carried a Barrett. And so I did a little bit of brief time in Somalia, and then I did four deployments to Iraq, two of which I would call combat deployments.
Okay.
As I classify as a combat deployment as some where I fought,
right.
Actually fought other men. So OAF, operate, you know, the OAF 1, the invasion, I was with 3-1, and for OAF 2, I was in 3-1 in Karma and Fallujah for Al-Fajr. So I fought in Al-Fajr as well.
Okay. So those are two deployments, and then you did two others though? To that area?
Yes, I did a deployment as the 1-1 gunner to Habaniya, but at the time, we changed the name of the bad guys to the good bad guys, and we weren't really fighting. And then the awakening had happened.
What year was that?
07.
Okay. All right. And then
there was a little bit of fighting up front, and then things calmed down, and everything turned the corner there on Anbar. And then I did another deployment in 09 in Nineveh province, Sinjar, Iraq, which is I didn't do any fighting in that deployment.
What was it like in 2007 when things got quiet? I had dinner with General Nicholson. I want to say 07, 08, and he showed me a picture of Marines painting curbs yellow in Ramadi, not wearing helmets and flak jackets. And I looked at it and I said, I don't even want to look at it because I know it's going to explode like any second. That's Ramadi? There's no way. Yeah, Mac, they had a marathon there. I'm like, okay, I know you've been drinking. What was that like? Wasn't it weird? I mean, because something plays so violent?
Not really, because to put it into context, no, it wasn't strange, because on my previous deployment, which ended in like January of 05, right after Al-Fajr,
right,
I got to experience absolute quiet in my, you know, in the area where I was, because we had completely cleared out Fallujah. So for the probably the last 3 weeks to a month of my 04, 05 deployment, I had absolute peace and quiet. No one shot at me, no mortars, no nothing, no IEDs. Mm-hmm. So when I came back in 07, that wasn't much of a shock because I had experienced that in Iraq before.
Wow. Okay, let me fast forward to, we talk a lot of leadership stuff, but first of all, tell people, how did this thing get going with you and the videos with 2nd Marine Division Combat Camera? First of all, they do a great job with it. How did that, and you become a little bit of a mini celebrity. I look and I'll see your stuff. Chris Way doing this, Chris Way doing that. Where did the idea come from?
The idea is actually not mine. It's my boss, the CG of 2nd Marine Division. He one of his kind of principal philosophical things he pushes, and I'm, you know, admittedly I'm a believer. I wasn't really at first, but I'm on board now. Is to develop Marines' will, and it's kind of hard to do in peacetime because, right, you know, you don't have the essence of being a Marine. You don't have the fight. But he's pretty skilled. I think it's a General Mattis passed down to him about how to develop not only a Marine skill, but a Marine's will. So in that, you know, so to develop Marine's will, he thought I'd be good at doing videos, and I did not agree. In fact, I tried to ignore him, which didn't work because he, you know, they gave you an order and they pretty much come back and make sure you follow it. So I did my first video and I was very reluctant. The first one was on the myth of, you know, suppressors and this and that.
Right.
Suppressors distract from your lethality and accuracy stuff, which is a video game-ism.
Right.
And that video turned out to be very good. So I'm like, whoa, that actually was received very well. So I did kind of an attention gainer with the bacon. and that one took off. So a bunch of gunners got together and sent me messages saying, hey, this is good. Keep doing this. Now, what it comes down to is this. At 11 years of being a gunner, especially a battalion gunner, I got so frustrated with teaching, for example, just one example, teaching a Marine to zero his rifle. I felt like I was doing it over and over and over again. And what I realized was 75% of the infantry comes in and gets out every 4 years. So it's not that I was teaching that Marine to do it over and over again. I was teaching a different Marine to do it over and over again,
right,
because I just kept getting different Marines,
right,
which coincidentally was one of the failure points of the M249 SAW, was I never properly trained a Marine to operate the damn thing. So the video is kind of like an economy of force efficiency to where I can put out a class on something which is probably the most important marksmanship thing they need to do, which is zero your weapon and test fire it. I can do that in a class, and the youngsters these days like watching videos. It just made my life so much easier. The word just goes to millions of people or hundreds of thousands of them.
What's your best video so far?
The bacon one was the most fun to do. But that was an idea I had that morning. We were going to film something else because I filmed multiple videos in one, you know, filming. We filmed for like 6 hours and they pull out these 2 minute videos. The one that that's a good question. There's like 15 videos out. In fact, one came out last night about automatic versus semi-automatic.
Okay. You keep going, and I want to come back, and we're going to have a little bit of a conversation, automatic versus semi-automatic.
Well,
keep going.
The one that I seem to like the most is the zeroing and anything about the suppressor. Anything about a suppressor or that capability, I really enjoy that.
So give us your thoughts on suppressors, because it's much written about. Mike and I were both I was working on the division staff in 2004 when the whole ACOG thing went crazy in the Marine Corps. Everybody had to have one. It didn't matter what your MOS were. No, we only have enough of the grunts. You can't discriminate against us. We're Marines too. We need them. Talk to us about suppressors. Same thing? Everybody need one?
Well, there's a different spirit of the times in the Marine Corps right now.
Oh.
And the spirit of the times is, and I think General Scales and his books, I've read his, you know, his papers and essays. I watched his Senate Armed Services Committee testimony. General Scales, U.S. Army retired, is a very influential person. Now, granted, I'm in total agreement with him, so that's just the truth in advertising.
Okay.
General Scales has put out a rather pragmatic and what I think is a sound philosophy that, hey, look, budget, we only have so much money. So we have to prioritize, and you know, other the British Army, the British Royal Marines Commando, they all do it, but we've been reluctant to do that because of fairness. It's not fair, so all that. But what I think the interpretation now is, it is not fair to penalize the riflemen in the rifle squad, and outward from there, so that everybody can feel the same and get the same badge when they go to the rifle range every year. You know, it's just not right to penalize the guy who was most likely to get killed, so that everybody else can feel good about having the same thing. I don't know if that made sense what I just said, but
the
focus now is on the rifleman in the rifle squad, the reconnaissance man, the scout sniper, the, you know, the ground combat element, the guys that have locate, close with, and destroy and kill and screen guard cover, those sort of things in their mission statement. Yeah, they're going to get the best stuff, and that's the way it is now.
Well, that's awesome. Muscleman, why couldn't you do that?
Because that was the fight that we fought at all liquor levels with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I watched it.
It was a brutal fight. It was a name-calling fight. And that's why he didn't take knives in with the mediums, because then it'd been a knife fight. And that's why, you know, Mac, I told you, and I told you a long time ago, and Chris knows this, and Chris will tell you, I bet Chris suffers from the same thing. I'd rather be in combat all day long, getting shot at, getting blown up, taking drives down dark roads with no NVGs on an IED-laden road, than to do combat in Quantico with civilians and other Marines in the Beltway on procurement, because it's nasty, it's dirty, it's filthy, it's a bullshit fight.
Okay, hold on. You're obviously old guy, old core, retired. Chris, have things changed? Is it much better now? It sounds like it. General Scale sounds like he's like the sun has come out now.
Well, okay, so Mike is absolutely right, and again, truth in advertising. All I'm doing is building upon and continuing to work and move forward what Mike and Jeff and Cannon Cargyle and guys like that started. So because it's such a nice fight, it takes a long time. And key people have to come in into kind of enter stage, and, you know, people have got to get into influential positions. Right now, the Commandant of the Marine Corps is, you know, his philosophy is matched with General Scales, And not that he wants anybody in the Marine Corps to go with less than. It's not about that. Because we got some great stuff. In fact, we got too much stuff. It's not, so it's not that, hey, somebody's going to suffer and accept more risk. No. The Commandant of the Marine Corps has established, I want to focus on my infantrymen and my ground combat element. So everything is aligned. It's much better now than it was for, you know, 5-10 years ago. And none of my ideas are original. Mike was pushing the suppressor long before I was even a gunner. Jeff Eby, M27, and Mike, the M27. As I said already, I was against that. So I get way too much credit for any of this. And the PPNO gunner, Mark Salmon's up there. I mean, he's the one that got me all these suppressors. So, I mean, there's a bunch of people that are in this together, and there's a bunch of people who are retired now who's, you know, set the conditions for me to succeed. I'm just getting way too much credit for it.
Yeah, well, don't run away.
No, I just stuck my hand in the hornet's nest and ran. You had to deal with it.
What? Hold on, let me read you. Here's an email. Hey, Mac, you dumbass, ask him about the pistol, all right? You guys have been talking about it. Gunner's been explaining it. You got him on. Ask him about the pistol. Yeah. Hey, what's up with the what's up with the pistol?
Let me tell him what the back. We got in a big debate, and I was totally against the Army with the procuring the SIG and the way that went down, and you know, and so we talked about weapon pistol procurement and why it was needed and shit like that. And so I had left the climate with. The problem with when the fight that we were fighting with Jeff and everybody was trying to convince the Marine Corps, is this a secondary weapon? Is this a backup weapon? Or is this one of those, because my equipment is heavier than I need to carry something light? We needed to define the requirement for the pistol, because the only reason we had a pistol was, you know, to go into the chow hall without carrying a rifle in combat.
Right.
So that's where, you know, and then we came out with the, you know, there was, and you went with it, with the Glock 19. There's off-the-shelf solutions that would be interim until we figure out what the requirements for a pistol would be. Because the Beretta is definitely not the answer.
Right.
So.
All right. So, man, as I sit here and listen and contemplate my answer, it's just amazing to me that there can be so much drama associated with a, you know, pound and a half little piece of metal or plastic. Sorry. So the U.S. Marine Corps is going to adopt the modular handgun system, which obviously is the SIG. Now, my personal opinion aside, I don't really think that all went down very well. I think I would rather go with the FBI, National Laboratory, and their testing. Because they know pistols and they carry them all the time. That's a lot of their primary weapons. They've been working on that science for a long time. So my opinion aside, we're buying that modular handgun, but we are going to conduct a thorough, as best we can, entire service review. And I think we're going to come out, you know, at the end of this with far fewer pistols than we had before. That's, I'm predicting that. Pretty confident of that. Now,
well, we tried to get rid of them back in the day.
Well, we just now got in line with the 2007 guidance and the changes to the table of equipment. That took, 10 years to do that. People don't want to give up their pistols.
Why?
Now,
they're useless. I remember being, I can't remember, in 2004, I'm Mattis's staff sec, and some lieutenant colonel comes over doing something. And he's in, I don't know from where, doing something, and he's going to go outside the wire, and he's getting his stuff ready, and, you know, I got to make sure his stuff's okay and that everybody knows he's here. And I said, hey, sir, do you have a rifle? He says, no, Mac, I got my pistol. I'm good. And I said, sir,
well,
let me just tell you, take my rifle because that thing's worthless. Right? And I said, let me just give you the advice that I got. The only thing it's good for is if everybody else gets killed and you run out of ammunition, you can kill yourself before they turn you into small pieces, okay? And he looked at me and he said, are you serious? And I said, do I look serious? And he took my rifle. He came back later that day and he said, hey, man, thank you. You know, we got into some stuff, and it was kind of, thanks, I appreciate it. But it's worthless. It's worthless, worthless, worthless.
No, it's not. Go ahead. It's not worthless.
Yes, it is.
We talked about this. What makes it worthless is the time that we put towards it. So if you want to look at importance, you want to gauge, words are never important because my actions back up my words. If I show that it's important, my actions will be. So the problem is with pistol is where do we train our pistol carriers? I mean, for Christ's sake, my biggest argument in 1st Marine Division was to the general, was you want to reduce liability? Give our post standards all our ODs, M4s or M16s. Why a pistol? They're going to end up dying if it ever happens when they get in a shootout. Because we don't train them. And the pistol course, I know it's changed since then, but when we were, you know, talking about this argument, the pistol course was a joke. Was an absolute joke.
Yeah, I thought
the rifle range was a joke, but the pistol range was the biggest joke.
And it still is in the sense that, I mean, the pistol training is sound, but you only get 200 rounds a year. I mean, and that's...
And what are you good at that you spend... Name a hobby, name a profession, name something that you're really good at, you consider yourself a professional, that you practice 6 hours a year at.
Right. So to that, or with all that having been said, and all that, I agree with all that, more than you know, what I would like to do, or what I've been trying to do, is advocate for a personal defense weapon, which, quite simply, materially, right now, until we go to our next generation service rifle, and I'm not really sure what that looks like, probably a 6.5 or something the Army's working on, LSAT and all these things. But I would like to take a 10.5-inch barrel upper receiver group and put it on an M4. I don't have any training problems. Training like I did with M249, where I got to take a person to train them on a whole new weapon. I've got something that I can compete in a rifle fight with, and that pistol does not compete well against rifles in a fight. I think right now that's an interim solution. A pilot, for example. It's funny, when they fly around Jacksonville, they don't have any weapons, any small arms in the Cobra. But when they go and they fly forward of the forward line of troops, they have a rifle in there, an M4. And they got their bug out bag and it's got a bunch of magazines in it. They take it seriously then. Like, where's my rifle? So, I've been in the AH-1 cockpit. And I have found that the Mark 18 or the H&K 416 10.5 upper weapon and a suppressor fit perfectly into both the gunner and the pilot's weapons mount. So the conditions are all set. We've trained them, as best we could, from recruit training to the rifle range, such as it is. I can give them that short barrel rifle, tell them not to shoot their forward hand, which is actually harder on a Mark 18 because it has more rail space. And off you go, and you can probably fight and maybe survive. Whereas with a pistol, it's ridiculous. So we are going to come out of that service level hot wash. I'm sure there'll be a compromise in there, and we'll probably still have too many pistols, but we're going to have far fewer than we do right now.
That's good.
Yeah, that's all.
Good news.
Yeah, that's all. That's good news. We should all be happy. Here's another email. Mac, I'm curious. First of all, this is awesome. I love gun talk when you guys do this. And I have watched a few of the Gunner's videos. He is very funny, as Mike said, when I watched the first one, in his own very dry way. My question is this. What does Gunner Wade see, and what does Mike think about Gunner Wade says, is the biggest challenge on the horizon for the Marine Corps relative to the world of the gunner? So what the question's asking is, Chris, you say what the biggest challenge is in the world of the gunner, and Mike, you get to comment on what Chris says. All right, go.
All right, Beth. I can tell you right off the top of my head, my biggest concern for the future of the Marine Corps or the effectiveness of the Marine Corps is the rifle squad leader, and here's why. I don't get that guy long enough to turn him into a mature, experienced, like technologically savvy 1000 level, basic level infantry task master guy. He's not old enough. I don't have him enough, long enough, and I can't keep him in there long enough. Hell, I don't have them right now. I have about probably 30% of them in their actual billet.
Wow.
That's survival squad here. I think, you know, you give me an M1 service rifle and some N-block 8-round clips. If I have the right Marines who are mature, experienced, and well-trained, well-paid, respected, I think I can go fight, you know, I can go fight our enemies right now with M1 rifles. I don't need a fancy LSAT 6.5, whatever. I need the person with the right training, maturity, and experience. So there you go.
Did you say 30%?
Yeah, that's about what we're at right now.
Wow. No, there's a, just again.
What happened to the initiative then that General Paxton, when he was at ACMAC, we were going to do that whole MOS?
We have it. We have it, and we're struggling. We're struggling with all sorts of competing. I'll tell you a couple. God bless them. I don't mean this in a, you know, pejorative or a bad way.
Here, I'll say it.
Just say it.
Sergeants and sergeant majors?
Oh, no. Actually, no. In fact, believe it or not, my division sergeant major and I sit down with the CZ and the G1, and we do a board for this thing. We're putting everything we got in.
That's awesome.
And we have some really good applicants to it. But these really good applicants are the type of person that sometimes and very often end up in 2nd Reconnaissance Battalion. Or MARSOC.
Yeah. I love, it's so easy to be in recon and retreat. You know, you know where to look.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your fishing pool is very, it's labeled. You know, MARSOC recruits from recon battalion. Of course, recon recruits from recon battalion. You know, so, and recon battalion, all they get to play with is pull up rounds. So if you get they get a guy that they don't like, they just turn him away. So,
right.
Hold on.
I want to go back because, interesting. I have one of my sons actually just got back 2 days ago from deployment with 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines. He's in Kilo Company and they've been messing with different configurations and whatnot. So we have interesting conversations about technology and billets and who sits in those billets. There's also an article written in Marine Corps Times, within the last month talking about staff sergeants as squad leaders. So Mike, wade into all of that, no pun intended, but wade into all that in terms of, that's stunning that 30% of those guys not having them long enough, you know, but it's, that's 30%. That's not good for the Marine Corps.
Mike, you get that?
Yeah, no, go ahead. You're in right now. So
all right. So I actually commented in that interview and I didn't realize I was interviewing with the reporter with 7 other people that were commenting on it.
Nice.
What I said to him was, I don't believe that the answer is a staff sergeant squad leader, not to mention the fact that the manpower model just won't support that.
Right.
What I would like to do, however, is find those people who want to be infantrymen and stay infantrymen as long as they physically can, and I want to give them some type of incentive, like schools, carry some extra so I can send somebody to, say, Ranger school or Sniper school, infantry professional schools, and better them. I want to pay them more. And even if I have to create something outside the World War II rank structure to hold them, like a Sergeant Step 2 or a make up a name, I don't care. I want to recruit, train and equip squad leaders in a different way that we've never done. And it looks more like the Marine Raider model in that, you know, it's going to be more expensive, of course. The only time I've ever seen the services, really truly get knuckle down and retain qualified people in position is, like, say, for example, when the Gulf War kicked off or when the Iraq War kicked off. They did stop loss and stop move.
Right.
I had a scout sniper platoon, for example. I was a gunny. I had 2 staff sergeant team leaders, 2 sergeant team leaders, and everybody else was a sergeant or a corporal in the entire platoon. I mean, where the hell do you get that kind of talent? That's what I'm talking about. And the only time we will ever do that is when we got a big old war we're kicking off.
All right. Let me read you an email about this and both comment. Mac, what effect has MARSOC had on the draining of the talent from the divisions and the regiments? Recon Battalion has always had their pick of the litter. Now it seems like the requirement that goes through there is much greater, which would seem to me rob the divisions and regiments of very, very talented young Marines. How do you address that, or is my problem here not true? So,
I'll just make one comment. It's when I was at 1st Marine Division, 1st Recon Battalion was the prep school for MARSOC, and it killed me to see that they could only actually keep up two active companies at a time because they were losing guys. And this was during when MARSOC was authorized to grow an additional 2,000 special operators. So they had to fill these things from somewhere. And they got the banners on the side, and you can do a walk on on the field, but very rarely did they accept walk ons because they, why not take this? You get a kid out of recon battalion, he's already got the bubble and the badge, So shit, you look at time in training, this guy is already a full up round. So yeah, recon battalion suffered a lot. I mean, so much that when they tried to stand at force recon, every time they'd stand it up and they'd get PO, MARSOC could come along and just, take everybody.
Is it a problem? Let me refocus this. So what impact does that ultimately have on the division and the regiments? I mean, your best guys are leaving on a constant basis, right? I mean, so the Brian Zickafoos.
I don't know if it's a big problem now. I mean, Chris could probably talk to it, especially 2nd Marine Division, because I was there when they had, again, they gave an additional, literally like 2,000 special operators, to the MSOC all over the place. And I don't know if they, at some degree they're going to top out, So you look at Delta or you look at, any other special force unit, they have monthly or every biannually they have tryouts, come down and do this. So I don't know what the replacement, the loss is right now. So,
hey, Mike, I'll say that. Well, MARSOC we feed MARSOC, of course, and now, I would say that the entire Marine Corps, feeds it with qualified and, candidates. So, but I'll say this, and I'm not slamming on MARSOC, quite the contrary. I've been over to MARSOC, the Marine Raider Regimental Commander, prior infantry officer, ground combat element officer. I mean, he gets it. What I think needs to happen, and I think is starting to happen, we need to do more of, and again, this is way above my pay grade, but I'm hopeful that in the Marine Corps, we the regular ground combat element, partner far more or much more with the Marine Raider units in all the operations we do around the world. So in other words, kind of like take our aviation element, a 160th SOAR, our ground combat element, Ranger.
Yeah. Ranger.
I mean, I think the Marine Corps is just made for this. We have our Raider regiments, we have our Raider battalions, and we have infantry battalions. We have our own Marine aviation wing. We're just like a ready-made special. We're like a miniature SOCOM.
But let's just play this out. Let's say you piecemeal two squadrons of Ospreys.
Right.
And then who suffers? Patrick McNamara and the Rifle Company A. Those are the guys, because now they don't have the assets, because they're not going to rotate. If 266 squadrons gets tagged to go be the Marine Corps' equivalent to SOAR, then, they're not going to rotate that squadron of responsibility. They're going to stay in special ops.
Well, I think right now, on a limited level, we have the ability to do this within our MUs.
Yeah, so here, Chris, remember, MARSOC, when they are deployed, they're using SOAR. They're using Air Force Aviation assets. They're flying MV-22s, the special variant that the Air Force flies, because the Marine Corps didn't get those.
Yeah, I think I'm hopeful, maybe a little idealistic and naive. I'm hopeful that we, the regular Marine Corps, can just get in on more of the special operations action. I think we need to.
Okay, okay, so hold on. Let me bring the discussion back, though, to the impact, the manpower impact. And I'm not hating on MARSOC.
No.
You know what I mean? But I mean, I love Sergeant 0311, Rifle Squad Leaders, and Alpha Company 1-1. I mean, I love those guys. And they're incredibly important to the Marine Corps, to the development of junior leaders. And when you tell me that, you know, 30, you know, we're manning that at 30%, and then we've got...
No, that's not just MARSOC, though.
Well, no. I understand. That's even worse, right? You don't have the time with that guy to turn him into the proficient guy, let alone the technology requirement that's now being levied on him with robotic machine guns and tablets and all the other technology that I see. It's an incredible manpower challenge just for sergeants alone in this complex pipeline of 3,000 Marines in MARSOC today. Right, approximately. You right, and then you have the reconnaissance battalion, and then you have everybody else. How do you stabilize that? Will it stabilize, Chris, after MARSOC steadier?
Yes, yeah, and Mike's right. That demand has definitely kind of leveled out from the initial just massive push for MARSOC. There's the steady state churn of recruiting, drill instructor duty, got to have people down at the depot because bad things are happening down there. I mean, there's a lot of stuff pulling from these people, but I really believe that if we, and we are, I mean, in fact, I'm sitting here in the parking lot at the airport waiting to go over to pick up my boss from a meeting where they're talking about this and how we can do this. If we break out of our World War II 112131 Hallelujah construct and mindset, which we are slowly but surely, we can create a new and special program that goes over and above what Squad Leader Development Program does. A prior service recruiter, I mean, if we get this right, we might get people that got out of the Marine Corps because they didn't want to go on recruiting duty or they got out because that's their right. You know, they fulfill their contract and they go away. We might be able to keep some of them because that's the retain part that I want to work on. I think we're losing good guys. Did things other than MARSOC, which we get a return on that in the Marine Corps, by the way. We're losing guys to, you know, name it out here in the civilian world, college, whatever it might be. I might be able to keep them if I can guarantee them retention, pay, acknowledgement, prestige as a rifle squad leader. Because, again, philosophically, I believe the Marine rifle squad leader is the most important person in the Marine Corps, much more so than me.
You know what? Again, I have a son who's a captain. I have another son who's a first lieutenant. I would absolutely, positively agree with you 100%. Just sit and talk in leadership issues with my sons around the kitchen and hey Dad, what about this? And my sons are lucky and that they've grown up like knowing guys like Mike Musselman and Dave Furness and Chris Bronzy. I mean, they Luke McConnell. I mean, they know what good leaders are, and in their mind, they have it how it's supposed to work. And then there's kind of a disconnect when they see it in our operating forces, and they're like, Dad, how does anybody expect it to work like this? And so it's an interesting discussion. Chris, first of all, we're out of time. I want to thank you. You've been, as advertised, smarter than I thought you were. I hope you don't mind if we bug you in the future and come back and talk shit with us because
the betterment of the Marine Corps. Corny as that might sound, I really still care about that.
I the only way I knew you is from your videos, but the one thing that comes out in all your videos. I watched the pistol one with you, like, laying on the grass and shooting and doing all kinds of...
That hurt, by the way.
Yeah, it looked like you're doing yoga with a pistol. I'm like, what's that about? but your passion for... Just like Mike, you know, you want to spend 4 hours with Mike? Start talking guns with him. Start talking ammunition with him. Oh, my God. Start talking ammunition with Musselman, and you're going to be there for 6 hours. And it's just ridiculous. But, no, your passion comes through not only for your love of weapons and firearms, but also your love of Marines and the culture of the Marine Corps, and that's what we tend to do here. So appreciate you coming on today and thoroughly enjoyed the visit.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Not a problem.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Mike?
Okay.
Well done, my friend. As advertised, Wade's a stud.
Yeah, he's one of the good ones, man.
All right.
Hey, I'll send you Chris's contact information, his mobile phone number. Just send him a text so he knows it's yours.
Got it.
And then, so then now that you have permission to talk to him at any time.
Nice, nice. Well, I appreciate it. No, well done. And obviously, every bit, as you said, funny and smart. And
yeah, he is, man. I mean, having Chris Wade in there, doing that was such a great benefit. I mean, and here's the guy that goes throughout his career. He'll get the colorful ribbons on his chest and medals, you know, to do what he's done. But to really know what he's done for the Marine Corps, you know, he'll never be in a history book. He'll never be taught, you know, from the recruits from MCRD, but just as important, and I'd say more important for the development of the Marine Corps than those guys. And I'm so thankful that, you know, the guys, you know, that they took on our passion of what we thought was wrong, and then they ran with it, and then they fought different battles with it. It's a fantastic feeling to know that those things went forward.
Buck just chimed in.
Yeah, he said, good show, fella. Feller.
And one of the cool things about, like, shows like, in fact, if you didn't listen to the interview, if you just tuned in now, I did an interview an hour ago with a staff sergeant who retired by the name of James Sanchez. Grew up as a gangbanger in East L.A. Met his wife at the age of when she was 16 and he was 17, 18. And they're still married today with three kids, right? Combat deployments and all of it. Fights his way out of his gang. He's a football player. Gets recruited by San Diego State. Right, they tell him he's going to redshirt behind the running back they already have by the name of Marshall Faulk. He's like, "Who's Marshall Faulk? I never heard of that dude. I'm not sitting behind him. Have you seen me play? I'm good." And so he joins the Marine Corps. And you know, our culture is a great one, and you got a chance to see it in a bunch of different ways today. Chris Wade, very much out of the bolt of cloth that Mike Musselman is. Passionate guys who love Marines and get frustrated by a support system that doesn't carry the freight and do the right thing often enough. But Mike, awesome. Thanks for sharing him with us. It was right. Very cool. Thanks.
Yeah, I'll talk to her.
All right, bud. See ya. Mike Musselman here on a – That was awesome. You get a chance – and that's the cool thing about this program. Whether the Commandant's on or guys like Chris Wade are on, you get a chance to meet and hear their passion for what they do. You get a chance to hear their level of experience and their expertise. And pretty cool. That's what's so intoxicating about the Marine Corps. Yeah, straight up intoxicating about the Marine Corps. And you should see him go in action. Even more intoxicating. Have a great day. We're going to talk a little bit of turkey tomorrow. Yeah. With All Marine Radio head chef. So, on a Thursday. This program's great, by the way. And I didn't know Wade was going to come on, so my thanks to Musselman for doing that. On a Thursday, All Marine Radio, over and out.